Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. And with me today, I have Johnny Smith. Hello.
Hello to you. How are you doing, Sam?
Very good. We started this about 5 minutes ago and we had some serious connection issues. So fingers crossed this is going to keep working. We might have a little delay. We'll work through it. But Johnny, can you tell the audience just a little bit about sort of who you are, what you do? You have been on the podcast before. And so everyone should go and have a look at the earlier podcast and see what you've been up to this point. But yeah, can you just give, for those people that haven't come across you, a little hello and what do you do?
Hello, I'm Johnny Smith. I'm a motoring journalist and turned YouTuber, I suppose. And in the past I've done various things on television, like Fifth Gear. And I spend my money on cars that I earn through cars. So sort of a hobby and a business. And and I started off in magazines many moons ago, before social media was invented. Or digital cameras.
Do we have a BSM? That sounds a bit weird. If you're before social media.
Yeah, BSM. That's a British School of Motoring. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
It's the BSM. Yeah, it's that. It's it was quite scary to think actually that when I first started as a journalist, we were still doing all the photo shoots for mags on transparency and then scanning the slides in. And I remember the transition to digi SLR cameras. I remember it being massive and it happening really quick. And when I say it out loud now, it makes me sound like a complete dinosaur. But wasn't that long ago, really?
No, it wasn't.
That was pre internet being monetized, I would say.
Before it started to get lucrative. I even this week, we wanted to buy a sort of tutorial type thing, and they said, "Oh, you can. We don't have it available to download, but you can buy the DVD." I was like, "I don't think I've got a DVD player."
Well, it's funny you should say that because we're having a bit of a clear out and my wife wants to get rid of the DVD player and the DVDs. And I'm a bit precious, maybe a little bit protective over some of those. I don't want to get rid of the DVD player. So I might tell her that I've got rid of it and put it in the loft. that's maybe what I'll do.
But then
unless
she's
listening to this, in which case it's all over.
Yeah. What time do you then go, actually, I can't use them anymore?
Well, I don't know, Sam.
Because computers don't have DVD players anymore.
No, that's true. This computer doesn't have a drive. No, I've still got CDs. I mean, I'm quite stubborn, I suppose, and I do like to hold on to certain things. And I guess just because it's the current thing, it doesn't mean to say we have to abandon everything else. I mean, look at vinyl records. That's proof of something unnecessary having a renaissance.
And coming back in a big way.
Yeah. So I think I don't want to get rid of CDs because I quite like the cases and the artwork. And I'm not saying that because I've got 10,000 of them, because I don't. But I know people that have just skipped like drawers full of CDs, and I don't know, I just can't bring myself to do that. I've still got some cars with CD players.
Do you leave one CD in those cars?
I have done, and I've bought various cars with CDs already in, and it's always been the first memory of that car, because you get in it and drive it home and go, oh, I'll just put the radio on, and then you go, oh no, hang on a minute, I've got the Best of Queen. I didn't put that in there. Where's that from? So I remember certain cars having certain music, like that it was the soundtrack to that car before you'd even driven it anywhere. So that's quite funny.
I used to have that with driving with my granny. She would always have like an ABBA CD in the car. And ABBA. That's what we would listen to every time. Or Kenny G.
Oh, Kenny G. Well, I think ABBA's probably a superior product. I think the thing about ABBA is even if you don't particularly like ABBA, you will know the songs, and the quality of the songs is incredible. Like the production, you know, if you're listening to it on a half decent sound system. So even now, can you hear an ABBA song and go, that's just Granny's Mini or whatever?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
pretty much. She had a RAV4 at the time.
Oh, nice. Two door. the early gen ones. Oh,
yeah.
Do you know what they're looking? They're getting thin on the ground now. Early RAV4s, and I'm not sure anybody cares. But I saw one a few weeks back and thought, look at that, sort of unusual now, and it looks strangely tiny.
Tiny.
Of course.
Right. One of the things I think when we last spoke, and I don't know, this is not really that car related, really, but you were thinking of, are you knocking down your house?
Well, yeah, that's been the master plan. All of it. We were supposed to have done it in 2020, and 2020 kind of went a bit strange, and so we were supposed to do it this year. And basically, Sam, in the last week or so, it was the week before last, we've had to run all the numbers again, and the builders won't hold a quote for more than about 2 weeks. We can't afford to do it because the cost of the materials has spiraled, like properly spiraled. And the amount,
it's,
and
gone,
of course,
mad.
It's the combination of it going mad, lead times on materials being a bit weird, borrowing mortgage money for a new build is really quite difficult anyway, and being self-employed. It's a huge shitstorm. And within that shitstorm, you kind of know how much money you can afford to kind of push to or borrow. And it's just gone out. It's just blown it wide. And it's really depressing because we've been working towards it for 8 years. In fact, it'd be 9 years. It's 9 years since we bought this house, and we were supposed to live in it for two and then knock it down. Well, we moved in the week after Wimbledon when Andy Murray won. So that's how I know we've been in here this long. And it's really annoying. And don't get me wrong, I don't expect people to feel sorry for me, because I'm lucky to have a house. But it's just been everything we've worked for. Yeah, so the short answer is I don't think we are. I think we're going to sell it and move somewhere else, but I don't have any idea where. And my dream garage is out of reach once again. Damn it.
That is really annoying. Really annoying. And also, actually, trying to buy cars right now as well, everything is so expensive.
Yeah. Trying to buy houses right now is really expensive. Because so if we sell our house, we'll probably get good money for it. That's great. But if everything else you're looking for is, well, hang on, you're selling a car. Are you not?
Yes.
You see?
I am. Actually. So,
yeah.
By the time this podcast comes out.
Yeah.
I think it will be, I've done three more from where we are live.
Yeah.
Which is about the number of weeks before the sale. So, okay, this podcast could come out before or after the sale. And so,
of
who
your
knows,
car.
But it was of my F40, which I've had. I think someone was asking me, like, oh, what's, your typical comments. Why on earth are you selling an F40? That's dream car, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I get it. And then you have the people that have listened to a lot of podcasts, or some people that listen to a lot of podcasts, are like, oh yeah, you've kind of, I've been sensing that this is going to be happening over a while.
Yeah.
Maybe here we go. And it's time. It's time.
Well, how many years have you had it?
I got it at the end of 2014, and it was finished being rebuilt in 2015, like kind of March, April time. Like 6 years.
What an incredible car to have owned in your lifetime.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Just to own one full stop is just mega.
The reality is, sort of now, I just don't use it.
Yeah.
Previously, I thought it was because before I was where I am now, I only had one space at home, and the cars would sort of rotate in and out, and some would stay. Generally, the GT3, the old 911 and the new 911, so the GT3 and the old 911 would rotate in. And then I moved to where I am now, so in Richmond, and I have a bit more space, and I have a double garage with a little bit of space outside it. And so I've now had the opportunity over time to have multiple cars there. And I've had the F40 here for like a couple of months, and I always choose a different car.
Do you?
Weirdly. I think if I lived in the middle of nowhere on a mega bit of road, that would be different, because I would take it for a half an hour spin. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I don't want to take it for an hour and a half.
You don't want congestion related. It's not a congestion car, is it?
No, it's definitely not a sort of congestion charge car.
No. But that's the thing, you see. I suppose it's different when you own a car that a lot of people will never own, and they won't know the reality of what it's like to own one. And so I know I've met people that have certain cars like that, and then they say, but really, I actually drive something else way more often. And the reality is, I sometimes wake up and go, I'm too scared to take that car out because it's worth too much money now. And therefore, the fun is slightly eroded out of it because I'm worried that it's something bad's going to happen. And then what do I do? Yes, okay, you've got insurance, but obviously that insurance is pretty hefty because it's worth what it's worth. So
your excess is not small.
Yeah. So you're going to get a Lada Niva, right?
Yeah. Well, I bought a Peugeot E208.
Yes. Cool car.
And I've been driving that a lot. That's my kind of daily around London car.
Yeah.
And I love it around town. It's great. Like, it's got a sort of soft enough ride. It's got the tech, so you've got stop, start, whatever, adaptive cruise control. Yeah. Interior is nice. Yeah. Like, just does all the stuff. We've done a couple of longer trips in it. Yeah. And then I've come across the charging network in the UK, which is
patchy. Yeah.
Today we stopped. We've been down in Dorset.
Yeah.
We took the E208 because that's the only sensible car I own at the moment. And we're on the way back, was like, okay, we'll just stop off at I looked up on ZapMap, there's other apps are available, and
but they're not as good.
that was the one. I was like, which one do I download? Download ZapMap.
Yeah,
found 150 kilowatt charger.
Yep,
plugged in and was like, okay, I think the car can only charge at 100, but 100 is pretty fast.
100's fast, really fast.
Averaged 55 charging
up. And what level of discharge was your car when you plugged it in?
Low, like 30.
Okay, so you should have got more than that initially. Yeah.
You should be like,
you should be getting at, you should point. Be getting like, 70, 80, 90 at that percentage, yeah. It's when people plug in at like 75% and they expect it to like throw 80 kilowatts in. It doesn't really do that. That's the thing. You don't know whether that's the grid control and that, or whether it's the individual charger. It's a bit of a roulette wheel. You do have, as you now know, you do have to you have to change your driving behaviour a bit, and you do have to plan a bit more than you otherwise would, and also always have a plan B, or possibly C.
Yeah, that's what I did today. Yeah. I had one planned that was like 10 miles down the road, 15 miles down the road, that was equally quick. Or similarly quick, that you go, okay, it won't take me 4 hours to go another 4 miles.
Yeah. It's interesting that you took the Peugeot for the longer journey because, of course, when you've got multiple cars, that's when EVs are at their best because you can sort of pick and choose the length of journey. You know, if you're using yours in and around London area, city stuff, short journeys, that's perfect. Yeah. Then you could go, well, now that I'm going to do a long journey, bollocks, I'll take something that's piston.
The problem is the other options weren't, let's say, the most practical of cars. So we had a GT3 RS 997 or an 812.
Yeah.
And we wanted to put quite a lot of stuff in it. 812 is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But we've done...
Yeah.
I've done more miles in that car since I bought it 3 months ago, 2 months ago, than I have done in the F40 its entire life that I've owned it.
Really?
Really.
Gosh. I saw that you'd taken the F40 out on the track, didn't you, fairly recently?
Yes. That was kind
Which
of...
Which was got to have been pretty special.
That was like the final sign-off for me, almost. I got a phone call saying, hey, we've rented a track. Do you want to bring your car? It'll basically be the only car on track. And it's a media day. Like, it's a filming day. So... Yeah. You get, I would say, in the levels of kind of driving on a track where you can do whatever you want, it goes like, I don't know, track day, like low-end track day, 100 cars, only pass on the left, like indicating, massively polite to everyone. You kind of have to phone everyone if you want to overtake them. Then you get like an RMA day, which is like you can overtake either side. That's quite novel. And then you get a test day, which is like race cars, no rules.
Yeah.
And then you get a media booked private track day, which is like, no, seriously, no rules. You don't have to wear a helmet.
You can drift.
You can go the wrong way. You can drift. You can literally do whatever you
like. You can stop for lunch. Track. Yeah.
Take some photos.
Yeah.
Set up a picnic. So...
Did you not drive it round there and go, I'm not going to sell this car. The love has suddenly just come flooding back. The romance is here. Damn it, I can't sell it. Or...
So it links back in because it's to do with like the value has a huge part of it. Yeah. So I drove it around and it sounded amazing. It's pretty good to drive, but it is kind of old as well. So you're aware of like it's not a modern thing.
Of course.
Yeah. And you're sort of driving it quite hard and you're like, okay, now I need to come in because ultimately, I'll push this harder and harder and harder and harder and harder and probably be okay. But there's a possibility you might not be okay. And I don't really want to hit a solid object in that car from a personal safety point of view anyway. Yeah. And you just go, well, actually...
You don't want to damage it.
No, you don't want to damage it. And no. I would rather then transition into, let's say, my GT3 RS, which was there at the same time, and drive that. Like, amazing experience. And then even... Yeah. My GT3 RS, which I'll push very hard on track, I would go one step further and my Radical, for example, or any kind of racy car, yeah. I'll push that to 12 tenths because I know if I go in the gravel, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Or it's not so bad. I'm not ruining a paint job.
Yeah. And it's not, it's yeah. And like something like a Radical, I suppose you could, if you had to, you could order another one. I know that's worst case scenario. Do you know what I mean? It's not an obsolete thing.
No.
Yet.
No.
Whereas a Ferrari F40 is completely obsolete. So.
Yes. And as soon as you say it's been crashed once, that's quite a dent in your value. And also if you're in the car and you crash on a track, I don't know, like that might hurt.
Absolutely. It might hurt. Yeah.
Especially if you've not got a helmet on because it won't fit.
Is that why you weren't wearing a helmet? You just couldn't put one on?
I was doing a bit of recording.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't fit the helmet on. So it was a bit of a mix. And I was like, okay, it's that sort of psychology of going, well, I know if I put the helmet on, I'm going to drive 10% harder than if I don't have a helmet on, he says.
Yeah.
But I think that is the reality. And... Yeah, just it was amazing.
Yeah, it sounds. I bet it was like, fantastic.
Pushed it. It made amazing noises. Anglesey, wicked track. And then kind of at the end, I was like, you know what? Yeah, I would love to do more driving like this. I'd like that more than necessarily just owning this car and not doing more driving like this. Now I've taken it on track, I was like, I want to take it on track more. I'm like,
yeah,
it's an expensive pastime.
So what you need to do is to sell it to someone who doesn't get to use it very much, but when they do, they'll go, hey, Sam, come along to the track in 2 weeks because I'm taking the car there. Do you want to have a few laps yourself? And you'll go, yeah, this is great because this was mine and it's still an exciting thing, but I don't have to own it anymore.
Yeah, I don't have to have the liability.
See, and this is what I'm like with dogs. And exactly like you are with dogs. People go, I can't believe you don't have a dog. It's like, well, I don't really want a dog. Well, why don't you want a dog? Well, I don't really want a dog in my house and I don't want a dog in my car, sure as hell. And people go, oh, that means you don't like dogs. I said, no. It means I love walking dogs and there's a cornfield out the back of my house. And when you see people walking their dogs down the cornfield, it's epic. And I said, I'd love to take a dog for a walk. But when I've taken it for the walk and got it all tired, it's all excited, then I just give it back to the owner. I'm cool with that.
Absolutely.
I don't want to own
it. I'm exactly the same with dogs. I love dogs, but I don't want to own one right now. I will borrow others. I would play with other people's dogs,
borrower.
All that stuff. Yeah. Like, just take it for a walk and be like, oh, puppy, great. And then I'm like, see ya.
Yeah, I'm that. That's what I'm like. That's completely what I'm like. I get hounded about not having a dog. I'm like, look, just leave me alone with my non-dog choices.
Yeah, okay. Let's dig into some of the things you've been up to in the last year, or cars you've driven, and then consequently conversations led off the back of that. You've driven a bunch of electric cars, so it's a little bit of a specialty of yours. And this was just a very general question. And actually, I think you did a video on this last week. State of the electric car market at the moment. You did a video, I haven't actually watched it, I just saw the title, of like summary of, because I had a few questions about resto mods and new electric cars and whatever. Where do you think we're sort of at? And what do you think of that stuff?
I think we're at quite a good seesaw where obviously the secondhand market is busier than it ever has been for EVs. So people are kind of picking up those residuals have proved to be buoyant on EV. So people are less skeptical than they were, let's say, 5 years ago. Because that was always the biggest stumbling block for a lot of people. I don't want to buy a car and then realise that in 5 years' time, it's pretty much worthless. And then, of course, you've got the fleet markets and the company car benefit and kind tax stuff being really, really lenient on EVs. So you're seeing more and more kind of business bought Teslas and Taycans and stuff. And then, but what's really exciting for me, apart from that, and seeing people who really kept EVs at arm's distance up until quite recently, and now they would come and talk to me about it like it's suddenly okay. You know, it's sort of like a coming out for some people, I feel. Hey, it's actually all right to admit that you don't mind EVs. It's like, yeah, it's fine. And it doesn't mean that you have to sort of abandon all the other enthusiasm for other cars. But the thing that's cool is I like this idea of I like the electric classic car sort of coach building type of idea.
Yes.
Doesn't work for all cars, but I think for some cars it works well, and doesn't work for all people. But I think for some people, depending on where you live and what your lifestyle is, etc., I think it's really cool. And I can see more creativity coming along on those lines with this idea of returning back to coach building where you buy an EV chassis, let's say the Volkswagen MEB platform, and then you go, oh, actually, I really want to put a, I don't know, let's pick a Fiat. I want an old-fashioned Fiat Multipla body shell on there. And you go, okay, that's probably possible. And I want it to be right-hand drive, and I want it to have heated seats made of recycled fishing nets. Okay, that's cool. We can do that. And suddenly you've got this real interesting mashup of historical-looking thing built for today, built for 2020-something, that can rapid charge, that might be able to handle and stop, can have as much infotainment or as little infotainment as you want. And I think that's what's good, because the good thing about that sort of thing is it's bringing together these people who like older cars or retro cars, or they like the idea of them, but they don't like the reality of them. And maybe it's bringing people who kept EVs at distance in to say, look, if you've got a Mark 1 Ford Escort and it's immaculate, you're not going to drive it every day, are you? Because you're just not.
Yeah.
So what about if you could get a brand new body shell for a Mark 1 Escort, which you can now buy, and you can stick EV drivetrain in it, and you can drive to work in it, and it's suddenly a brand new car that's funky. Suddenly people go, oh, yeah, hadn't thought of that. That's quite cool. Go, well, it's totally possible. So I like the possibilities. And I think...
It is very cool.
Yeah.
That situation of going, I can have any car, but it will have, you could, if you want, adaptive cruise control. Like, I can charge it at home. I never have to go to a petrol station ever again. Yeah. I don't pay congestion charge.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's the thing, you see, you know, stuff like congestion charge is a big deal. It becomes a real hassle. It changes the way people, or the where people want to live. So make the car kind of adapt for you. So that's going to be quite good for sort of creativity and resto modding and that stuff. And also, I think EVs are finally, we're starting to see some really desirable designs coming out.
Yes.
Whereas I think, you know, the early days of EVs, when I say early days, it was sort of, you know, 2010. There's a lot of white good looking EVs, and I think we're gradually, you know, a decade or so on, we're departing from that a bit. There will be always white good cars because some people want that sort of car, but you know, you're sort of Hyundai Ioniq 5. Suddenly, you're like, wow, I don't even care what that runs on. Just look at it. That is a pretty impressive, out there car.
That car, when I first saw it, it was the first. It was one of those cars that just immediately you're like, oh whoa, they've really mixed this up. Like they've gone, throw out the old conventional stuff. Yeah. What can we now do? What would be cool? And they put it in that car.
And it's made it to production. As you know, there's so many hurdles to jump over before a car can make it to reality. You know, lots of teams of managers and boring budgeting people who say you can't do it like that. And so to get that car out in the open, production ready, like that, with a real world good range that you could, that's practical for families or whatever. But also, I mean, seriously, I just want someone out there to buy one and buy a Lancia Integrale and just have that as a two-car garage. Because I just want them in matching colours, part next to one another, just go, look at that. How cool is that? Integrale for the weekend, Ioniq 5 for every day, whatever you want to do with it. How cool is that? It's just brilliant. And maybe if you go DeLorean as well next to that, if you want a three-car garage, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
But
my only problem with the Ioniq 5 is it's massive.
It is big. Yeah, yeah.
I feel like we're starting to get there. I didn't realise that there was this sort of natural progression of EVs in the sense of SUVs are quite easy to make because they're big, lots of space for the batteries. The batteries can go underneath and they're raised up and whatever. And the smaller you try and make your EVs, the more packaging problems. I mean, that kind of makes sense. But like the one everyone wants is a small town car that works well. I think that's the EV that makes the most sense for probably.
Yeah.
People love SUVs. But
And
I want like...
You want a Honda E-sized thing.
The Ioniq 5... Or, like even the Honda E's, like, it's kind of, I think they're all raised up because they've got these batteries underneath, but that sort of size. And I think the Honda E does the interior stuff really well, but it doesn't have any crazy features like you can spin the seats around or they recline or whatever, all this sort of stuff that you go, like, you know what, let's do it completely differently.
Yeah.
Like, I would love some of that.
A sort of Japanese K car style and design with EV drivetrain. Yeah, and nice and narrow and bijou for city parking and nimbleness and all that stuff. Yeah, totally. I think the Ioniq 5, they're going to build smaller ones. So as we've seen with things like Audi are pretty good at building the same kind of car in a bit of a Russian doll way. I think Hyundai are going to do that with the 5. And I welcome it because, frankly, it looks bloody good. So
it does.
Yeah, bring it on.
I think we're really coming into an era of other companies other than... Now, put me down and say this is not correct, but I think German cars have been held at the sort of the upper end for a long time.
Yeah.
And by various people, for whatever reasons, handle better or whatnot.
Yeah.
But we're really coming into an era of the rest of the world making awesome looking stuff now.
Yeah.
Like big start.
Completely.
I think we're approaching everything differently.
Yeah, and the German stuff was always held in high regard because of its reliability and its longevity. Mm. And actually, we've seen over the last, let's say, 15 years, could be a little bit more. Actually, some of those cars are not as reliable as everyone thinks they are. You know, Golfs used to be absolutely bulletproof. We've had Golfs with terrible engines in recent time, and VW Transporters, you know, some of them have got parts made out of chocolate. So actually, that you can't say that anymore. Whereas, yeah, you've got companies like Kia, Hyundai, who have been really pushing hard at like big warranty, amazing build quality. They've stolen decent designers. They're making it work. Yeah. So I think, and people are not as brand loyal as they used to be, are they? I mean,
no.
There used to be a time when someone's dad would buy a BMW and you'd know that he was the BMW guy because he would always buy another 5 Series or whatever it was. I don't think we get so much of that now. I don't know.
A lot less so.
Yeah.
A lot less so.
Yeah.
I used to be, it would be like, I had an Audi. I had, my daily driver was an Audi of some sorts for a long time. Then I had an M2.
Yeah.
And then I had another Audi, and I've now got a Peugeot. Like,
there you go, look.
If you'd said to me 5 years ago, you'll have a Peugeot, I think the electric car nature of it has changed it a lot because it's not, the products aren't out there. Not every manufacturer is making the car that you want to buy.
No.
And they're not necessarily there. So you're like, well, I'll look at these other brands and go, actually, Peugeot now makes some really sick looking cars.
They make some great cars. Yeah. I'm driving one at the moment, an E2008.
Oh, yeah.
And I just really enjoy it. I just think they've definitely, they're having the best time they've had in years at the moment. I suppose their biggest problem is, like a lot of brands, is convincing people to try them again and sit in them and just kind of revisit them rather than just discounting them because, it's just a Peugeot. I hear that all the time. Yeah. Well, you know, it's just a Citroën, so why would I be interested? Well, because some Citroëns are good and some are crap and some BMWs are good and some are appalling. So it's just the way it is, isn't it? But, I mean, the irony is with the BMW stuff, you had an M2, which is like probably the coolest BMW, I'd say. One overtook me yesterday in a really nice flat grey. Have you noticed how like the electric BMWs are almost the only good looking ones at the moment? BMW are doing some very odd stuff.
Very odd stuff.
Very odd.
Horrific stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's just gone so strange. You just want to take them to one side. It's a bit of like a mate who goes off the rails and you go, I think we need to talk to Sam about, you know, he's a bit too out there. Should we bring him in and just check if he's okay?
Yeah. Do you want to hang up? Just come back.
Come round to my place tonight for dinner. Come round. We'll have a chat.
Sit in just the Peugeot.
Yes, yeah, right. Come and sit in here. Is it here? This is your safe place. Let's call this your safe place. You can tell me anything you want. It'll all be safe. Don't worry. It's cool. I'm not going to judge you.
Exactly. And then who was it? It was on the Drive Nation, whatever they're called, their platform's called now. I can't remember what it's called. It was Dan or Andrew, I think, did an article recently.
The intercooler.
The intercooler, yes.
Yes.
And they did an article on the M4. It may have been someone else written. I haven't done my research on this one. But the article said, actually, they're selling a lot of M4s. Like, it's doing really well. And I really, really, really want to look at this data of, like, numbers that they've sold and compare it to the global situation. Like,
yeah.
It could be the fact that actually the competitors' cars are now crap. Or, like, your C63 is now going to a four-cylinder. And that will all those buyers will go, well, I'm not having one of them.
Yeah.
And then there's hardcore BMW heads that will be like, oh, well, I need to have the new one. And it's an M3, M4, so I'm always going to buy it. But I feel like there's a lot of people like me, for example, who had an M2, loved it, probably would have had an M3. If they did a Touring, absolutely would have an M3 Touring.
Yeah.
In the new design, no way in hell.
Because the M2's the only cool-looking M car, I reckon, almost. And it's the cheapest. It's sort of like, well, this is great. It's the budget one. It's the most fun. It's the best looking. Like, where do I sign? It's just amazing.
And it's about to get a facelift, isn't it? Or there's a new 2 Series.
Yeah.
We're going to see it at Goodwood.
Let's hope they don't ruin it.
Yeah, hope we'll be watching the front.
Yeah, it's all about. I know it's all about the front, isn't it? But like, yeah, going back to your original question, I think it's like people are. I think you have to have a broader appreciation nowadays just to keep your eyes open for what's out there, what's good. I mean, look at what the GR Yaris has done for Toyota. Suddenly, it's the vehicle. Like everyone wants a GR. Everyone's putting their hand in the air. Who would have probably never been seen in a hatchback Toyota or a non-Land Cruiser, I'm trying to think, or a non-Supra, and gone, oh, yeah, totally want that. And it's just a great move by Toyota to do it, but it's that perception, isn't it, that the ripples from the pond work out and people suddenly, who would have never looked at Toyota suddenly go, actually, they do know what they're doing, and sometimes they can pull something groundbreaking out of the bag. And I would love a GR. I'd love a GR.
There's another car that's coming that I think could do the same thing. The new Lotus.
Yeah. The
Amira. I don't know whether you've seen any sketches or stuff,
I haven't.
But looks pretty wicked.
Yeah.
On the rumour mill. And
you've totally seen it, Sam. You've totally seen it.
I don't know.
I don't know if I've seen it. I can't remember. I was drinking.
I've seen it. It looks pretty good, okay?
Yeah.
And I think that could be another car that makes a lot of people that wouldn't have looked at Lotuses before look at Lotuses and go, you know what?
I hope so for Lotus's sake, because I've noticed in the last couple of years, and I don't know about you, but suddenly retro Lotuses have become cool. They were always one of those cars where you'd look at and go, yeah, I mean, they're okay, but would I really buy one? No, of course I wouldn't buy one. What are you thinking? And then suddenly now everyone wants an 80s Esprit. Everyone's digging the 70s stuff.
Yes.
Aren't they? And I think maybe that's
They've literally just popped back up.
They have, haven't they? Like, I let my kids watch a James Bond film for the first time. It was last week before last. And I said to my wife, this is quite an important moment. First James Bond film, you know, and which one do we choose? So I went on a couple of websites going, which is like the most kiddie friendly Bond, you know, the least amount of intercourse, the least amount of like violence, what are we talking here? And off the top of my head I went, oh, it's going to be a Roger Moore one, it's got to be a Roger Moore one, and it all boiled down to The Spy Who Loved Me, that came out top. It's just let's watch A Spy Who Loved Me. I haven't seen it for years. Of course, it's got the Lotus in it. My daughter, who's quite into cars, when she saw the Lotus, she went, what's that? I said, it's a Lotus. It's a Lotus. She went, I like that. That's really cool. I really like that, Daddy. I said, well, you wait to see what it does later on in the film in about half an hour. And she's all over it. She thinks it's the coolest car. And there's a guy in our village who's got a 70s Lotus, so not that one. That is 70s, but, you know, an earlier one than that. And I went, look, it's similar. And I remember maybe 5 years ago, like they were so cheap. And I know they don't age particularly well inside. I've always thought they look a bit hideous inside. I think I'd have to probably change the insides if I owned one. But I'm glad for Lotus that this is happening, because it's probably coming around about the right time for them to maybe kind of do a Peugeot and have a bit of a renaissance, and everyone suddenly start talking about them again. And so. Yeah. No, it's cool. I'm looking forward to it.
I think they've made cars that petrolheads like, but petrolheads not necessarily buy.
Yes.
Like, you get the people that have got their Lotuses and they love them.
Yeah.
And actually, they held their value really well and they drive great, but there'll be reasons why people don't buy them.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that this new one is going to sort of remove a lot of those reasons why you wouldn't buy one.
Yeah.
And people will go,
Yeah, you're
maybe
right.
I would get that instead of the Porsche. Or...
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you always, like, the Evora was always up against, like, Caymans and stuff, and people would always go, I like the Evora, but would I have one over that? And you go,
yes.
No. Yeah. And that would be either people are scared that it won't always start, or the dealer network, or there's loads of reasons. Or actually, it's I'm scared to be the outsider. I'm scared to be the odd one out. But actually, and I've always tried to encourage people to be the odd one out. There's nothing wrong with being the sort of the strange one in the room, as long as you're not, like, nasty. And if you turn up to a meeting and there's 25 Caymans, and you got one guy in a crazy little Lotus. I think, yeah, who's the interesting one, right? Doesn't mean to say absolutely. They're all good cars. They're just all different.
And you can walk into a Lotus dealership and you can buy a Lotus. Whereas, like, let's say the competitors that you might compare these two cars to might be a GT Porsche, if you're looking for the more tracky versions. Yeah. And you can't buy the GT Porsches.
No.
There's people that own them, whatever. But, like, you can't just walk into a dealership and buy one.
No. It's a real shame, isn't it? I think Porsches...
It is a shame.
I think Porsches... We'll see. Yeah. I mean, I've never bought a 911. I'd love to. And it's on my list of things that I must try and do before my heart stops beating. But I don't like the way their attitude has gone with the sort of buying the customer.
It's just production numbers, and it's a problem. It's they've got so many people that want them. UK is specifically really bad. Europe, it's nowhere near as bad.
Isn't it?
If you want a GT3, one, the price difference is huge.
Right.
So previous gen, 991.2, you could buy your GT3 spec'd up with like 135, 140 max pounds. In euros, so like France, it was like 185 euros.
Really?
So they were like a good, like, I don't know, 20K more.
Wow.
That sort of amount, which puts off a lot of people.
Yeah.
And left-hand drive, you can get a car from anywhere. Right-hand drive, you're quite limited.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're not as...
Maybe that's what I should do, though. If I buy a 911 for life, which is what I always envisaged that I might do, maybe I'll just order a left-hand drive one just to piss off Porsche. I don't know.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Even though they don't care. Why would they care?
No, I think you've got a left-hand drive one. Fair play.
I think what pisses me off is the sort of hierarchical thing of, like, if I've been saving for the last decade and I phoned up Porsche and I say, I want to buy a GT3, and they'll go, well, what have you bought previously? I go, I've never bought any Porsches previously at all. But I've saved up this money and this is the car I've always wanted and I've worked bloody hard for it. They'll go, I don't think so. And I think that's wrong. I mean, I know they've got their reasons, but I just think that's sort of it's a bit wrong.
It's tough, isn't it? It's a really different... I don't envy them the job of deciding, because I had a conversation with someone when the new GT3 came out, a salesman, and I just said, look, I want one, put me on the list, am I going to get one?
Yeah.
Just give me the real talk. I don't want you to say, yes, we'll add you on the list, and then, like, it's never happening.
The list doesn't exist,
I'm wondering in the situation, and he said, well, the way we do it is we rank our customers, and yes, there'll be some customers that will get them, that they've been long-term customers, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But basically, we do it by amount spent in dealership.
Right.
And they said, we have a list of, at the moment, we have a list of 50 people that want a GT3. And starting at the top, the person had spent £1 million in the dealership in the last, this was when the GT3 came out. So when was that? I don't know, 6 months ago, September time, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
He said, since the start of lockdown one, someone has spent £1 million in the dealership. They're our number one customer. At this point in time, they were not buying a 918. They were not buying a Carrera GT.
No.
They bought three 911 Turbo S's.
Wow.
And you're like,
so was there a bog? Was there a bog off or anything going on Turbo SS?
I think it sold. I think they'd sold a company, or their company had done another funding round or something, and he bought each of his compatriots a 911 Turbo S, and wow, and had bought a Panamera and a Cayenne and whatever. And you go, you know what? That guy absolutely should get a GT3. So that was the top. Yeah. And they said the bottom, the guy has spent, or guy or girl, the customer had spent, it was like $300,000 in the last 2 years. And you go, okay, fine. Like,
still,
I get it.
Still quite a lot of money, yeah.
It's
yeah.
still a lot it is, of it, money.
It's, yeah, it's a difficult quandary, isn't it? I, like you said, I don't envy them. I suppose it's just, it's following in the footsteps of the Ferrari kind of,
I think we're starting method. To see, with, like, let's say GT4, for example, they're making more cars. They made a lot more GT4s than people thought they were going to make. So if you put your name down and said, I want GT4, whether it was the first gen or the second gen, you would have eventually, you pretty much would have got one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most people got those cars and they're still, I think they're still making them. Yeah. It's a bit of a problem. Yeah. You have driven some fun stuff that I'm interested in.
Okay.
You drove that 600 horsepower, 250 GTO build resto mod thing. That
you need to buy that, Sam.
Maybe that's the next purchase. Car.
Yeah, because you can just drive it like hell. It's amazing.
A bit cheaper.
Yeah.
What was that like? Can you just try to describe for the people that have not come and watched the video? I would suggest going and watching
the video. Yeah. So it's a replica 250 GTO Ferrari with it. So it's an aluminium body. The body was apparently built by the real people many, many years ago. And the guy bought two, I think, crashed other Ferraris. One was a 400 and one was a 365. So it's sort of got the chassis of a 400, had the engine bits of a 365. Then he blew the 365 engine up and then went, oh, do you know what? It's not powerful enough anyway. And then put the engine out of a 550. Was it 550 Maranello? With a manual gearbox.
Mm.
And turn this thing into a, it's kind of a resto mod. That's how I would probably describe it, because it does look just like a 250 GTO. It's 600 horsepower and it's very raw, you know, low back seats, very flimsy insides. But obviously power steering from the 550 Maranello, race, beautiful, beautifully set up suspension, back axle from the 550, so it's geared for 200. And it's like, and it's light, as you can imagine. And the guy just drives it as how he wants to drive it, because he says the thing is, it's not a 50 million quid car. It's not.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun. I've got to say, I was wondering what it would feel like. And I drove it on a really hot day, and it's got the knockoff wheels and it's got the period tires, what the Avons, I think. Mm. And it was, but it drove really well, because it had the rubber was period, but it's modern compound. It was set up to actually corner really well. It was fine in congestion. I got caught in Northampton in rush hour and it just sat there, but it's got electric fans, so it's cool. I mean, it was really, really, really fun. And the guy wanted me to max it out. We rented an airfield up the road, and it's a good airfield. It's 1.4 miles long.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. So, yes, where they the last landing of the Harrier jump jet was there. Not that it needed all that runway, but you know what I mean. They used to fly Vulcans from there, I think. And but I got it up to about 160, I think, 165, and I had a lap belt on.
Mm.
And I just thought, yeah, you know, this is quick, and it was not really straining at 160, because it's pretty aerodynamic. And I thought, yeah, I mean, this is cool, but I'm going to back off now. And he came back and looked at the telemetry and he went, oh, you only did like one. I heard you. You weren't maxing it out. Well, no, I wasn't. You're absolutely right. No. And I said, listen, because he's a great guy. I said, look, I don't feel comfortable like maxing it out. A, it's not my car. B, I just feel a bit vulnerable. And I don't need to do a 200 for the particular feature that I'm doing. It's not really relevant. I needed to give it a bit of a kicking, but not 200. He just got in it and just sped off with his shorts on and did like 192 or something.
Oh.
And came back. The thing was absolutely like, you know, it's like a heat shimmer around it.
Yeah.
And I went, bloody hell, that was impressive. But the thing I enjoyed about that car the most was the clutch and the gear shift, because it's 550 Maranello, was just really good.
Mm.
It was really enjoyable to drive. It wasn't clunky. But at the same time, obviously, you had to concentrate because it didn't have... It doesn't have traction control and all the other modern things. So it's that amazing feeling of like, you do feel like you're in an old car, but not quite really old. It's sort of, I got caught in rain in it, and it's got wipers that are about like 3 inches long or something, and they don't quite touch the windscreen well enough. And you're like, oh, bit of rain X. And it was okay. I didn't feel like I was going to die. So I was really, really pleasantly surprised by it. I think it's, and I, you know, it was yellow. And the guy actually said, because I had to get insurance for it, of course, I couldn't get the car home to him that night. So I said, listen, can one of your guys come and pick it up? Because I just can't get it back to him. I'm really sorry, the shoot overran. He said, no. He said, just leave it at home and drop it back in the morning. I said, yeah, what, like on my drive? And he went, yeah, be fine. And I was sort of like, ooh. So I barricaded it in with lesser cars.
Yeah.
That my own cars. And and then in the morning, I took my son to school in it.
Nice.
And I thought, well, I'm not really going to get a chance to do that again. And it was very special. But it's a very smelly car because, of course, there's no soundproofing, and the fuel filler, you know, the race fuel filler is visible inside through the rear roof pillar. So it's very, I came out of it absolutely stinking of super unleaded. Like, I walked in the house, my wife went, you stink, get out. Just this walking petrol monster. Yeah.
Don't light the stove. Don't light the stove.
No, exactly. nobody light anything. No candles, no nothing. Not near daddy. Yeah, so that was good fun.
That presumably as well, that engine from the 550 in a car that's significantly lighter.
Yeah.
Must have felt, probably, I've not driven a 550, but I imagine it felt a lot better in that car than it did in the 550 because it's like 400 kilos lighter or something.
Oh, yeah. So much more lively. So much more lively. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. And he said, he'd bought one, he had a spare engine and gearbox because he said for a long time, those cars made quite a lot of 550s and quite a lot of them got crashed, it seems. So he said, anytime I saw a 550, manual, I'd buy the engine and gearbox. He said, I just think they're really good. They're pretty strong. And, yeah, he'd changed the cams in it and he'd remapped it, so it was lively, it was really lively. And yeah, it's one of those cars, you know, you drive it. I had it drove it for a day, and I'd really, really like to drive it again. In fact, it'd be quite a cool car to do a long journey.
Mm.
He drove that particular car to, where did he drive it to? He drove it flipping miles, Portugal or somewhere on holiday, and he was going over bridge with his wife. And one of the windows blew out because it's plastic windows. One of the windows blew out. He had to spend the rest of the holiday with one window missing. But he's just one of these people that doesn't give a toss. He went, oh, yeah, you know, he said, I put toilet roll in my ears. My wife wound some toilet roll into my ears. I said, what? You're on holiday with toilet roll in your ears, driving around in a windowless 250 GTO. But he's that kind of guy. He's just, it's
There's
all
a
about
few
driving.
People. That you meet that are like that, and it's often for me, it's often older people who are just like, you guys don't know where it's at. One of the guys is Mark Lyon from GTO Engineering. Do you know him?
I don't know him. I know the company, but
he's a cool dude, and he gets to drive, you know, all these sorts of crazy cars all the time. And for a similar sort of attitude of like, yeah, you just drive it though. Like, what are you worrying about? Like, yeah, it's got no windows. Yeah, it's really loud, but that's what it's all about.
Just concentrate. Exactly. I suppose that's the thing with all cars though, isn't it? You know, even the really, really, really rare expensive stuff, it's still all nuts and bolts and cogs.
Four wheels, four tyres and an
engine. Yeah, you don't want to damage it. You've got to concentrate, but you also need to enjoy it, and that's what it's for. And the only reason why Will is selling that 250 GTO, because I said to him, "Why are you selling it? You seem to love it so much." He went, "I'll lose my license." He said, "And if I lose my license, life's not worth living. So it's got to go." I said, really? He said, yeah. I'm just going to focus on historic racing. So all his really fast stuff is just on the track now. So he's just focusing on that. Yeah. And I kind of saw his point. I thought, yeah, okay.
I think I'm slowly going that way.
Yeah, because he was talking about the 70s and the things that bad boys used to do. And he did actually, he made an interesting point. I don't think I put it in the final video. It's just like the attitude towards driving fast and being a bit lawless, being a young idiot, was just, you just kind of, it was just seen as a rite of passage. Oh, well, he's just a young un, he'll get over it.
Yeah.
But of course now that's not really acceptable. So he said, I'm glad I've done it, but now it's things are different. I've had my fill. I'm going to just do it all on the track.
Yeah, so totally. You've started doing some very, very good chats with people, and you get some lovely chairs out. And you film some long interviews.
Yeah, I do.
I'd recommend these. You've done a few now. All well worth listening. One you did recently with Mate Rimac.
Yeah,
mate.
Mate.
And then at the same time, not literally at the same time, but yeah, you drove the Nevera.
Oh yeah, what a car! Yeah.
This what is that like? And surely this is the point in time when electric cars have gone, see your combustion engines.
Oh, well, I think, I don't know if I'm going to have a driving experience like that again in the near future, you know, like compared to other stuff I've driven previous. It's so fast. There's so much power and torque on tap. It was quite alien. It really was. It felt sort of like teleportation in some respects rather than actual driven transport.
Mate,
he's a very interesting guy anyway, as you know, and he's quite driven and quite a perfectionist. But he was very much like, well, when you drive it, you have to drive it hard. You need to really experience it. And again, I was like, yeah, okay, great. But at the same time, I don't want to end up doing a Hammond. So can we let's just build up to these things. I have to say the car's just unbelievable, really. It's so impressive. Trying to kind of get it to skid and stuff, I thought it's going to be really awful.
Mm.
Those sorts of cars often don't necessarily want to do that. So you have to provoke them in the wrong kind of a way. And it wasn't. It was really quite enjoyable. And then we drove it round through some villages and some towns, you know, through some low speed areas. And it was damn comfortable, compliant. And you sort of forget just for a minute. You go, I'm driving a 1914 horsepower thing. I mean, like the 2300 newton meters of torque. What's going on? I mean, like a third of that's lunacy. A third. So seeing it, and you've got all these dials, of course, like all cars seem to have now, all sports cars, you've got your different modes. And it was just so quick. But the launch controls just, yeah. I think I did, what did we do? I think I did launch control maybe 7 times. And each time it was just like, this is still ridiculous. And I've been in cars that fast, but they are out and out. They're drag cars, they're dragsters. Yeah. You know, they're built for one thing. They're not comfortable. They're deafening. And they don't really do more than half a mile or a mile at a time before you kind of shut it off and kind of go and check it. And this is a warrantied passenger car that you can order. Yes, of course, it's one of the most expensive cars in the world. But, I mean, it's that idea of you've got it all if you want it. You've got blooming Apple CarPlay and comfortable heated seats and nice trimmed Alcantara dashboard, but you've got just speed that you can't really comprehend. I'm really looking forward to seeing a privately owned one or them. Mm. I mean, you're never going to see that many. It's going to be a sort of Veyron type thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you see Veyrons, they don't really come around too much, or Chirons. Yeah, so it was very exciting, and it was great to meet Mate again. I've only met him twice before, and every time he's always been just so interesting and enthusiastic. Yeah. And I, because travel's been so difficult, when I knew we were going to go out there to film with it in Croatia, I said, listen, I've got to try and do as much as we can to make it worthwhile. And I said, I've got to interview him and see his own vehicles. can we do that? And it was a bit of a lot of toing and froing, but we managed to make it work eventually. But well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thanks for watching it.
It was cool. You got a few, like a couple of very distinct bits of content out of that. Like, yes, driving the car, but then also a full sit down, which I've sort of been waiting for someone to do. I've definitely pitched it myself a few times. We'll get there.
You'll totally get there. But he's a, and that's, I think that's the thing. I mean, obviously he's so busy and got quite a lot on his shoulders. Yeah, he's got a lot on his shoulders. But I think, like all these people, when you kind of, when you give them a bit of time and you say, listen, you haven't got to worry about anything for the next hour. Let's just do this. You realise, I think he is a genius. Okay, I came back from that job eventually because obviously I got a little bit trapped on the way home by losing my passport. But anyway, gloss over that. When I eventually got home, I said to my wife, I said, I think I've met a genius. I think he is a genius. Because I don't think there are many geniuses in the world. I think he is one. I do. I really think he's an absolute visionary. And he's probably got more drive and clarity, focus, whatever you want to call it. I think he's got more than most because it is very impressive. He's also a seriously fast driver. I think he's fearless. Yeah. He drives his... Because he's weird in that he makes electric cars, but his daily driver is a piston car. So he has it the opposite way to a lot of us. And, and his daily driver is this M5 competition, which he said it was really annoyed that he'd ordered the competition. He says he shouldn't have. But he drives it so hard. I mean, like, so hard. I swear if it was nicked, it wouldn't get treated like that. I really do. It gets so, so abused. But it takes it. And he says it's well made. He said I would have broken it by now if it hadn't been well made.
Do you think... I guess because he, you know, he runs that company, but they don't make a car other than the Nevera. So if they did, he would probably have to drive one of those.
Yes.
I'm sure it would be suitably ridiculous and whatnot. But because they don't, it doesn't matter. You've got to drive a car.
Yeah. And he does a lot of test miles in the Nevera and, you know, all the previous versions of it. So there's a few lying around at the factories and stuff, and he basically just clicks his fingers and says, I'm taking this one. And, of course, because he runs the show, he goes and takes it. So he says, I do a lot of miles in these. I do a lot of testing in these. You know, I have people that do it, but I still sign it off and I still want to have final judgment. So he says, I do a lot of kilometres in electric cars. It's just that, obviously, my business is a little bit different. But he has pull cars as well. They've got a Taycan pull car that gets... that's knocking around.
Yeah, because presumably you've got to see what's going on. Like, well, we've recently had the Tesla, what is it, Model S Plaid.
Oh, the Plaid thing. Yeah, yeah. I know, amazing numbers.
That was the amazing numbers. But also, I think it's incredibly impressive. It's clearly insanely fast.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. It's not far off that Nevera.
No, it's not.
So much less money.
It's mass produced.
The Tesla thing where there's some asterisks on, even on their website, on their numbers, they're like 0 to 60, 1.9 asterisks. And it's like, it doesn't do it
rolling start.
In 1.9.
It's always like, rolling start as well. They always say
it's
that.
One of them is it's on a drag strip and they do, I didn't know there was a thing. I'm sure you must know all about this. The 1 foot rollout.
Yeah.
So you get like a 3 foot of acceleration before the timer starts on your drag strip run.
Yeah, now it's not in competition, you don't do that. But obviously, that's the way they've timed it so that you don't get that slight delay in the sort of the shifting of mass.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it is a mass. It's a big car, the Model S.
Yeah. And I think I was listening to someone talk about this. It was that guy... Engineering Explained is his YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And Jason Fenske, I think that's his name. And he was explaining it. And he said in a lot of cars, let's say the Tesla, that's worth like 0.2 of a second.
Yeah.
That first foot is a lot of time.
It is.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it's more like 2.1 or 2.2, which takes it a lot closer to the other cars that they've made previously.
Of course.
Still insanely fast.
Yeah. Oh, that's the thing. Still insanely fast, but you're questioning it. And what's impressive, as far as I'm concerned, is it's Tesla just playing by their own rules. It's them going, we're going to give you a 0-60 time, but it's on our terms. It's not on your terms. And how weird's that for a company to go, do you know what? We're going to time it the way we want to time it. And we're not going to give you any other stats. So it's tough. You either take this and so, in the small print, it says 1 foot rollouts. It's basically a rolling start. No one else has done that. I mean, I know Ferrari have been a bit like, oh, dry weight, wet weight, all this stuff, but.
Performance numbers, engine things.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, I get a lot of people saying to me, oh, you're down on Tesla. You're always criticising them. I say, I'm really not. I think what they have done is changed the world of cars. Yeah, exactly. Game-changing is a term which gets you overused these days, but it is game-changing, there's no doubt. And they're learning incredibly quickly. They're forcing everyone else to stand up straight and focus. And But I worry about the disciples. I worry about the people who are just a little bit too blinkered. They believe everything. And I think we possibly shouldn't believe everything.
We're seeing a lot of this. I was talking to the wife today. I don't really want to. We don't have too much time, so I don't want to dive into this sort of
congratulations
stuff,
on that, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
I hope it's been amazing. It's been great.
It's been good.
Good.
We were talking about data and...
Always a turn on for me.
Always great. Always great. She's a scientist, so like it's we love a bit of data. But we were talking about the things like someone gives you some stats, and we were talking about pandemic related stuff, but someone tells you a bit of information, and a lot of people just go, that's the information, blah 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 blah, that's how I'm gonna act. Or Tesla's telling you it's 0-60 1.9, so you then go around and tell everyone on the planet that it's faster than everything else on the planet. It's the fastest production car ever. And you're like, no, the Nevera is definitely faster and it's definitely a production car, whatever, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And there are just, I'm one of those people that looks at it and goes like, does that sound right? There's an asterisk. I'm going to read the asterisk. I'm going to find out what the asterisk means. It's still insanely fast.
Yes.
But they've done something weird here.
Yeah.
And this is what it is. Whereas we do seem to get some very blinkered, like, no, this is what it is and what it's going to be and blah, 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 blah. You're like, I'm not putting them down. I'm saying they're great at whatever. They're great at X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But this other thing seems a bit iffy, shady, not quite right, etc. And all car companies have this. They have good bits and bad bits.
Of course they do. Of course they do. And that's the thing. Tesla's still a benchmark for so many things. So many things. And if it keeps going the way it's going, it's still going to be, it's changed
the... Just killing it.
Yeah, it's changed the perception of EVs for so many people.
Yeah.
Whether you think Elon's mad or incredible, whatever you think of him, it's sort of irrelevant, really. It's what's been done by the company and is brilliant.
And the tech, you can't argue with the tech. Like a Tesla, you press something on the button in the app, like unlock the door or whatever, and it just unlocks. It's like...
Yeah.
Done. Whereas on any other electric car, it's like calling the server, dial up connection, 5 minutes later, the aircon turns on.
Yeah. It's absolutely true.
Why is that the case?
I know. And we're going back to talking about sort of the EV kind of coach building future that is probably going to appear in front of us soon. Can't wait to take a Model 3's body off and throw it away. And put something good on there.
Yeah.
That's the thing I'm waiting for. I know that's a bit cruel. The back end's all right. But, the Model 3 as a drivetrain, as a thing, as a vehicle is fantastic and a really good value. But bugger me, I couldn't drive a car with a front like that. I just couldn't. You know what I mean? It just...
Okay, Model 3 or M4?
Oh, bloody hell, man. That's really hard. Gosh. Do you know what? I think Model 3 is better.
Model 3.
I think Model 3 is better. I think that's how bad BMW have got it. Yeah, I agree.
I can't wait for the next, whenever it's going to come out, the little Tesla.
Oh, yeah. The Y, you've got the Y, which is going to be the smaller X, isn't it? And then you've got the other one, which...
It's going to be called something.
Yeah.
Two, I think, is the rumour mill, but who knows?
Which will be good.
The Tesla very small.
It'll be nice Yeah, it'd be nice to have a hatchback non-SUV one, wouldn't it? Be quite cool. Mm. I'd like that.
Right.
The truck, let's not even go there with the truck, though.
We'll just ignore that. Yeah. That is not turning up in the UK.
I'll believe it when it's actually real. When it's real, real production real.
Yeah.
Until then.
Exactly.
Sorry, folks. You can keep your £10 deposit because there's nothing like a PR stunt. Or is it? Is it £100? I can't remember what it is, but it's, of course, it's fully refundable.
£100.
So. Yeah.
$100.
I've put my deposit down for a Cybertruck. Have you? So does that mean, what, it's all real? It's such a big commitment, isn't it? $100. I mean,
it's a 0% zero, you know, it's a zero interest 3-year loan from 100,000 people or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I'll take that. Because they're not going to ask for it back anytime soon.
No, it's good PR. It's incredible PR.
So I think we should wrap this up with, well, I would normally do 5 questions.
Okay.
But I will tailor it a little bit because you've been on the podcast before. 5-car garage.
Oh. 5-car garage. Well, do I have to? Is it? Can I keep some of the cars I've got, or not? Or is it all new? Do they all have to change?
You can have. You can keep some of your current cars if you want. 5-car garage, unlimited value. You're more than welcome to keep some.
I'll keep the Dodge, and I keep the Beetle. What else would I have? I mean, it changes by the week, Sam. Really,
that's the joy and beauty of this question.
I know. I think I would have a 997 GT3. Yeah, 997 GT3 that I put a back seat back into. Mm. I would have I mean, it's daft, but I'd probably buy. There's only one out there. I'd have a TVR Speed 12. Road registered, because I remember seeing
it
at the motor show.
Not going to see another one of them.
And I just thought it was just like, this is it. This is from space. This is just insane. Yeah. So yeah, it's a street legal speed 12 would be quite neat. And was it one left?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Right now, honestly, a Hyundai Ioniq 5.
Mm.
Forever a day, or a VW ID Buzz if it's launched anywhere near what we think it's going to be.
What's the ID Buzz? Is it like a little? Is it a
minivan? It's the VW van. No, that's the van. It's the microbus, the sort of the retro-ish but not retro-ish VW van. The bus, fully
that's
EV.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, the ID Buzz is going to be mad if they get it right. But as we know, VW. They're not exactly, they're a bit, you know, German football team at the moment, aren't they? Sort of, they're not getting it all right. So I say that like I know about football. Trust me, I don't know anything about football. So I think that's what I'm believing this week. In a couple of months, if you were to ask me, my 5-car garage would be changed.
You can only drive one car for the rest of your life and you've got £500, something on the side.
Oh, £500. Oh, easy. Bubble-shaped Micra, which is a K11. K11 Nissan Micra, but it would be the 1.4 engine because it's actually quite quick. And you can probably live with it and service it for about 16 quid a year. And I think they are incredible cars. I know they're not glamorous, but then for 500 quid, what are you expecting? I've said this before. If everything came to a big crash and close, you know, and I went bankrupt and things were very, very tough, bubble-shaped Micra has to be.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. And you've got one other car.
And one other car. Bubble-shaped Micra and
any value now.
Of any value. Oh, shit. Oh. Bubble-shaped Micra. Let's say a Singer Porsche.
Yeah.
Yeah, what the hell. Although not standard 964s are going to become more rare, I think.
Probably.
I'm going to put my money on where my mouth is. I'm going to say in 8 years from now, from when we're talking, if you turn up to a car show in a totally standard 964 base model Carrera 2, it'll be way rarer than all the other Porsches there. Because it won't have been bought by Singer. Yes. No one's resto modded it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally. And I'm not down on Singer because I think what they're doing is amazing.
What's the most undervalued car at the moment?
Undervalued. When I did the recent Barn Find video for the Late Break Show on the Rover SD1 Vitesse, I did say that, bearing in mind that they did a homologation of that and it was really successful in touring car, for so many years, no one's really cared about them. They're not worth proper money. They haven't had much respect. And I found that strange because if it had a different badge on it, I think it probably would have been worth way more. But with this sort of recent interest in historic racing,
and old British cars, Lotuses and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, I'm seeing, you know, like 70s, 80s, kind of early 90s cars being raced rather than the sort of 60s, 50s stuff.
Yeah.
I reckon that's what's propagated this interest in SD1s again. And people have gone, do you know what? They can really hustle and they're quite cool. So they're probably going, now that I've said that, they have probably gone up. But so there's that undervalued.
Well, that's all right. You have already given one answer.
Yeah. There's another one, though. There's a better one. There always is. It'll come to me in a minute. I'll probably text it to you after we finish speaking. There always is. Smart Brabus is a good one. But don't all go and buy them because I want to buy one while they're really cheap. You know, if you think about it, a Smart Roadster Coupe Brabus, when they were so expensive and really, really good. They made you feel good. They felt like a true little sports car. They were fabulous. And you can buy them for not a lot right now. I'm down with
cool.
that. They're really cool.
They are cool.
And I don't think they're ever going to make them again. So it's one of those things where it's like, and look, Gordon Murray's got one. So if you need any reassurance, I mean, if you don't believe me, if you don't think my opinion is worth much, I appreciate that. Murray's got one. So let's just put it there, shall we? Let's just say that.
You could drive a T50 or a Smart Roadster Brabus. Same, same.
Yeah, exactly. It's all the same. It's all the same.
Same, same.
Yeah.
Four wheels, four tyres, steering wheel. Energy.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I guarantee you would wring the neck off the Smart Brabus Roadster and you are probably not doing that in a T50.
No, you're really not, are you? And as cool as the T50 is, I suppose it boils down to that whole thing of like what you said right at the start of this podcast with your F40 is like you've got it and it's a wonderful thing. It's special. But day to day in the real world, how much do you use it? And is it one of those things where actually it's sort of quite hard to live with, so you kind of don't? And it's difficult for people who it's difficult for people who don't have one to fully understand that. But in the same way that someone once told me, what was it? Someone once said to me, the richer you are, the more problems you've got. And I said, I don't understand. What do you mean? And they went, well, because you sort of because they've got more options, they've got more complications. You kind of can buy yourself more problems. I'm like, oh, yeah. Well, I hadn't really thought of that. It's a strange idea, but yeah.
Well, if you hang out in, let's say, a, I don't know, luxury yacht club on a terrace for like an hour, I imagine, if you sat near some groups of people, you would hear all sorts of problems that you're like, I don't think that's really a problem. But that person really thinks it's a problem.
Oh, it's
They're
a problem.
They're really thinking it's a problem. You know, what colour to spec their shear on? Like,
I just don't know. I can't
decide. I've already got four and I want another one. And like, I just don't really like yellow, but I've been told I should get yellow.
Yeah.
Let's ask some YouTuber what colour they think I should do it. I'll do that.
Yellow shear on. Wow. Yeah.
The most interesting car for you at the moment. What you Googling? What you looking up? Con Classic, Auto Trader.
I'm really interested in the electric pickup stuff in terms of new. The Ford Lightning really interests me. The Rivian I've been waiting for so long. Hurry up, Rivian, damn it. I think that's good.
Well, which of those two is going to come out first?
Well, I mean,
because the Ford's actually quite a long way away.
Yeah, I think the Rivian will come out first. It certainly should, because it's been in the wings for some years. Mm. But it's going to be really interesting for me, if as long as those two products are as good as we think they're going to be, of how it changes the attitudes of that sort of owner, that kind of car, that rough, brutish kind of macho, big slab-sided pickup. So, I think they're quite cool designs. So I'm really interested in those. Yeah, I do fancy. I mean, I'm not really. Yeah, I don't. I'm not a pickup person, really. I appreciate certain pickups, but the Rivian R1T is quite special, I think, as a design. It's really quite special. Mm. So I'm quite down with that. Yeah, and then old cars. Matra Ranchos is my new fetish. Yeah, I've got to try and own one of those, trying to maybe possibly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Hillman.
I think you talked about
Hillman Avenger
last time.
Tiger. I probably did, Sam, because I'm just a broken record. And I've just got the idea in my head.
But apparently, coming back in.
Records
back
are in
favour.
They're cool, right? Yeah. So I want to do a Resto Mod Matra Rancho. Yeah, before they all disappear. And I want to buy a Hillman Avenger Tiger. That's what I want.
Mm.
It's the Thinking Man's nice Escort wing. Mexico. Yeah, well, you know, the glorious 70s. The glorious 70s. So I very much like
you know what?
Oh, I know.
This wing reminds me of.
Yeah.
Have you seen the new Aston Martin Valkyrie AMR Pro, the track car?
That's not the one with the face of the old school Vantage, is it? No, that's not.
No, this came out.
I haven't seen it. No.
Within a week. Oh, okay, when this ends, Google it and look at the wing at the back. And they've basically taken the rear wing of the Hillman Avenger Tiger, complete with stickers, and they've turned the whole design into a wing. It's genuinely the maddest wing I've ever seen on a car.
Wow, I need to look at that. It's Do you think Aston mad. Would ever admit their influence? Or I want someone from Aston to say, oh, yeah, it was all about the Hillman Avenger Tiger. That's what we always... Do you know what? I want the Hillman Avenger Tiger to start to become one of those cars that's put into collections. People who could buy other stuff, but they don't. You know, like the Fiat 500, the classic Fiat 500 has become...
I was about to say, like the Fiat 500.
Everyone who has a collection of Ferraris sort of goes, oh, and of course I've got a little Fiat 500 because it's cute and we all love it and it's great. And I feel like...
Lamborghini Tractor.
Yeah, exactly. All that kind of stuff, which just slots in nicely. I want the Hillman Avenger to appear. I don't know how. Or a Matra Rancho. Yeah, it'd be quite cool. I'm just going to buy an old A6 all-road and just chop the body off.
Might happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And just put the Matra Rancho body on it. There
Lower
you go, job done.
It. Looks mad.
Yeah, job done.
All that. Right. Yeah. Well, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Sam. It's been really cool. I enjoyed speaking to you last time, so thanks for having me on again.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.